Hi, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today's full episode has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. We're connecting you to various contemplative teachers, hearing their story as well as sharing their meditative practice. If you don't have time today to listen to Rome and Takago's full story, you can look at the show notes and skip ahead to the meditation portion and then come back later to the conversation. We've also learned from our earlier episodes that there's this challenge between the passive participant of listening to a podcast interview and that more active space of dropping into practice. So for that reason, we've developed pocket practices, a way for folks to simply do the meditation on their own as a separate time. So you can look for that next week. Today, we're talking to Rome Intagago. Rome is a branding consultant. He has his own marketing and branding firm. He does quite a bit of things in the music industry, music festivals, as well as pulling people together into conversations, creative folks. Our conversation's great because he points to that challenge around grief and shame in the creative process and how that can sometimes cause us to bottom out and not be really transparent with our clients, transparent with ourselves. But then also the challenge of holding together a project and sometimes its brand and its identity without oversharing and traveling everywhere telling all the worst news from the discovery creative process. So hopefully you'll be able to sit in and join us for all of that conversation. You could be doing a million different things right now while listening. I'm actually about to start chopping some vegetables for a dewy sausage soup. Maybe you're sweeping some leaves off the porch or taking the dog for a walk. Whatever it is, I hope that you'll take a minute to slow down, take a breath, and enjoy the ride. Well, this is Troy Bronsink with From the Hive, and I'm excited today to have Rome Intagago with us. Rome is a brand genius. He's a neighbor in the Northside community. He's worked with Christian Moorline, our own neighborhood association in Northside, and even our kids play together. So Rome, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You bet, man. I think it'd be interesting just to kind of start by sharing a little bit about we were sitting at the coffee shop a few weeks ago, and we were talking about your work both in kind of when you're working brand wise, thinking through organization or its work, or you're working with a particular artist to promote what they do or any of that, that there's kind of a way of being present, that you kind of have a different way of kind of interacting with folks. And so since most of the folks listening to the podcast haven't met you yet, tell me a little bit about how you show up in the room and the ways that you get the chance through your work to interact with folks.
The easiest way to put it is that, my work in of itself can be very social. It's an intentional sort of approach to understand first. So generally, the way we view whatever it is we work on is what is the ground floor level feeling and approach that'll be the result of this thing that we're building. So generally, whenever I walk into a room, I'm just always processing energy. So when I walk into a room, whether it is to sell an idea, to buy an idea, to revamp an idea, or just to be in the room as a sounding board, I recognize what my intention and what the need of that room is, and I try to play my role to the best of my abilities.
That's awesome, man. So tell us a little of your background. How did you end up in this work? You weren't born in the West or in America, and so that gives you kind of another perspective, I think. Certainly in our conversations, it sounds like it gives you another perspective of kind of how that relational work kind of happens.
Well, I was born and raised in Nigeria, in Enugu specifically, and I came to the States when I was 15 to finish high school, and then I went to UC at 16, and I've just stayed in Cincinnati since. My general approach to doing work, I'm not sure if I can ascribe it to my cultural origins, but I would say it's probably just a combination or a microcosm of all the different cultures I've encountered growing up.
A lot of times when I engage folks and I have like a client service role, right?
A lot of what I'm hoping for them and what they're hoping for themselves, those can be different. And so
sure.
There's this sense of kind of listening, what is a client looking for? How do I serve them? And then what is it that I kind of see from my perspective? And how do I make that known? I'd be interested in kind of how you hold that tension.
Well, that's something that definitely comes up a lot in the creative field. Because you end up, we tend to focus, as far as FireRealm goes, we tend to focus on startups or businesses that are sort of like in the middle of transition. Mm-hmm. Because I've found that those tend to be the most open to change than other legacy brands we've worked for. So generally, when I walk into those rooms, I'm also sensing the fact that, you know, you're basically coming into someone's house and say, that's an ugly couch. You know what I'm saying? And they're going to have a visceral and emotional reaction to it, even if they also agree with you that that's an ugly couch. But they're going to try to fight for the couch automatically.
Yeah, right.
And so over the years, I've learned to, instead of saying, that's an ugly couch, I would walk into the room and say, do you use that couch a lot? And perhaps open up a conversation around giving the client the opportunity to be able to tell me what they think is off and what ideas they have to reorganize the room in a way that makes them feel happier about the general feel, the energy inside of that space. So you enter it first listening and asking pertinent questions, but creating space for them to sort of process moving beyond what they think they love the most, right? Mm-hmm. And then once they share all the things, as many things as they feel like they can, then you can move in and use what they've said to talk through sort of what your ideology is and how you may want to either shift or redo or do away with any particular idea. So the goal is always to recognize that energy is it's based on reciprocities, but the exchange doesn't happen well when you're the one who's driving the conversation. The person you're speaking with, who you're trying to help, needs to sort of set the tone, and they need to let things out. They need to sort of go through the stages of mourning, I'd call it. You know, it's like recognizing that a thing has happened. This is no longer working. Here's why it's not working. Here's what I try to do to keep it alive, and then it's not moving the way that it could move. That's what you're here for, is to help me through the process. So you just watch them sort of go through the denial to the acceptance process. You know what I mean? Whereas if you walked into the room and said, you are messing up, they're going to go into this state of sort of protecting the idea as opposed to recognizing that it's something that needs to be shifted.
That's powerful. So it's almost like you're like a grief counselor that's helping folks move from one stage into another kind of stage of their relationships and the way they order their priorities and the way they order how they present themselves in the world.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of branding and a huge part of just company making, because, you know, we do things beyond just brand, and each of those conversations sort of follow the same path. It's like, okay, you know that you need help, but you don't want someone walking into a room and saying, hey, man, you need help.
Yeah, right, right.
Because that'll sort of elicit the sort of like back up against the wall, you know, and just negative protectiveness of something that they should just let go. So your job in that situation is to meet them in that moment, care for what they're feeling, listen, and create space for them to express it. And then once it's out of them, then all of the pieces are out on the table for both of you to take an aerial view. By both of you, I mean, in some cases, like 15 people in a room or 20 people in a room, and we get to take an aerial view and see all of the pieces of the thing that we're trying to shift.
That's powerful. Do you think, how often do you think shame shows up in that exchange before you kind of set stuff up? Like a lot of times in interpersonal work, when you're helping folks through grief, there's this discovery of like the regret, right? And in that space, a lot of folks kind of close down and go like, I don't know how to do the interior work to move right. past this loss because somehow I feel responsible for this loss and there's shame that's there.
There is. I mean, in the professional sense, it's real. It's like, you know, I made a decision that cost us $100,000, and it's $100,000 borrowed from my family, and now, like, I have to see them every day knowing I failed at something. So it's recognizing that moment through the questions that you're asking and letting them know, most importantly, that no good thing has ever existed on this planet without pain. And it's okay to have messed up. That's a part of the process. But now that you're, in a sense, in a state that you're ready to say, you know, there are 100 things involved in this process, and I'm really good at 25 of them. So now, I need someone to handle the other 25, and then the other 25, and then the other 25. And that's a hard place for people to get to. And generally, as like a consultant, you're sort of helping them walk into that moment, and then you're letting them know, no matter how much you think that you've messed up, I believe that if we do what we got to do properly, we'll be able to get you to where you want to be. So it's a space of sort of like welcoming that shame or that worry or that grief or that embarrassment, but also exuding this energy that's like, regardless of what's happening, I think we can build something here.
A whole different way of playing. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. There's some cases where you can't build anything, and that's, and you just have to be that, you have to be honest in that state, in that situation as well. It's like, hey, you know, we've gone too far down the line. I'm not sure if I can help you resurrect it. You know, any other company would just be like, yeah, just pay us a bunch of money. We'll try a bunch of stuff. And at the end of the day, not be able to create any sort of lasting change. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's not how we like to do things.
Good. Well, that's awesome. So the we at this point, who is that? Who all? What does it look like with your
company? It's myself and four other individuals, then like a loose crew of about 10 to 20 freelancers that we pull in depending on the job.
And you said earlier that no good thing comes into the world without pain. So how is the good thing of your company reflect that?
Oh, man, in so many different instances. When we first started off, we started off as an events company, so we would develop an event from the ground up, operate it. I would put up my own money and try to push it forward and make it a popular thing. And we had many successes, but we also had quite a few failures, you know. And not every good idea is going to work. And that's one of the things that I learned. And I had to go through this process of sort of like learning to allow my failures to just be failures and not necessarily an indictment of my process.
That's worth holding right there. That's big. An indictment of the process. So the process may even be right, but but sometimes we use the language. A lot of times in this podcast conversation, we end up talking about that entrepreneurial edge, which may not apply to everybody's situation, but there's times when in the creative process where you're putting something into the world and it's a really vulnerable act, and we don't realize that like the universe doesn't always match that vulnerability with success. Like many of the folks who have found success in whatever, I'm using air quotes, right? Whatever that means, it's been because they've stayed in the vulnerable space. And sometimes I describe it like fishing, right? And there's this combination of like, you might be a master at the lures, but you still have to know which holes folks are biting at and what time of day. And for you to say that it's not a verification, that the method itself may not even be wrong. It may be that it just wasn't the right timing. And it's so hard as a creative or an entrepreneur to stomach that and go, it wasn't time for that idea. What else? What do I do next?
Yeah, I mean, it takes definitely an inherently almost unrealistic belief in oneself to be able to push through those moments while you're having all of the real life repercussions of failure, whether it be financial or social or whatever it may be. I had to learn how to be able to fail but still maintain the public face, right?
Say a little bit more. Why do you think it's important to maintain the public face while failing?
Well, because at the end of the day, no one wants to invest money in something that's failing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know, so what is that like? You know, I think a lot of folks struggle with that as if it's a type of, I don't know, like it's a hypocrisy, like we're not being authentic. And on the other hand, not everybody's engagement with you and your brand or your organization or your effort needs that level of intimate disclosure.
No, and I went through a part a very long period where I decided to be like really honest with people. Mm-hmm. Because like for the longest time, you know, we were creating and building really wonderful things, and people were aware of me and the brand and all that other good stuff. And whenever they'd see me out, they'd want to talk about like, you know, so Rome, what new cool thing are you doing? And like, I'd give them the full lowdown, right? Mm-hmm. But when I hit a wall, that it was just like, there was one particularly painful event that we spent a lot of money on and a lot of time, a lot of energy. And then the partners we were working with dropped the ball on quite a few things. And then the event ended up like, you know, I lost basically my life savings. And I was like, oh, yo. So a bunch of people came to the event, and like on the outside, like outward looking in, it looked super successful and very wonderful. I knew that I just lost my shirt. Yeah. And a lot of our social media chatter was around like, you know, these are all the positive things that happened, because I knew that at the end of the day, all people cared about was wanting to go to the next thing. So they are not invested in my losses or my wins. They were more so invested in the energy that we were creating. And I had to sort of like hold that. But then a few years into it, you know, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to tell people the truth. So like, my job is to go out and to be places and talk to people for the most part. And someone asked like, yo, so how are you, man? It's like, well, you know, I just went through this terrible experience. And like, you'd watch them sort of go from like super excited to talk to Rome to like the eyes will glaze over, or they'd just be like really, really uncomfortable, because they always sort of saw the brand and myself as like a source of light, right? A source of a very specific light. And then my sharing the inner workings of it was not something that they were excited about. And it helped me understand that no matter what's happening as a brand, that it isn't just a commodity that we're selling or the services that we're selling. It's also what we're representing, which is a certain amount of confidence and a certain amount of get it done. And you got to wear that. And you have to allow people to only see you as that if that's how they're coming at you.
That's
not everyone wants your honesty. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think I don't know if you'll remember that, but I feel like that's where, in our case, just in our neighborhood, in our coffee shop there, that's where our friendship developed. Is there was a time when you would ask me about the Hive? And then I don't know if you remember, but it's poignant for me. It was a classic Rome moment where I started sharing a lot of this, and you said, you know what, man, you know, sometimes I just want like a thumbs up. It's going great. Like I don't need the play by play. I don't need to know the ins and outs of this, you know, nobody had told me that to that point. So what I thought I was doing every time when I was sharing all of this information, what I thought I was doing was giving people an insider look into the ins and outs, and you helped me realize that there's good times for that. That's not always what people are asking when they say, how are things going with the Hive?
Very true. You got to read the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some people just want to believe that you're winning all the time, because that informs how much they love you. And also in some cases, how much they hate. You have to be all right with that.
Huh? So, you know, I want to take a turn towards then some of the ways then that I think you live in that space beyond your own company, like I've in your own, like I know you're quite aware of your personality as it's connected to brand in that, but I think some of the ways you host conversation, and so the last time we were together, you were telling me about these dinner groups you pull together. And yeah. I think it'd be interesting to hear how, you know, a lot of this podcast are encouragement for folks is to develop a contemplative practice. And I'd like to hear what those different practices are. But my hunch is that these dinners are one of those types of ways that you, you make space that some folks might call sacred space or thin space, like intentional space. And out of that comes a certain kind of community, a certain type of quality that otherwise wouldn't be happening on this person's weekend. So share a little bit about that, would you?
Sure. I mean, it's definitely difficult for me to sort of separate my person from the brand of the company, because I basically became a company. And my intention and my personality sort of became the brand for the company, and it happened to attract other people who felt strongly about where I was trying to go. Mm-hmm. And also knowing that I felt strongly about where they were trying to go. So they invested in building the brand, and we invested in building them. So that's always been the sort of like approach that I have to the day-to-day energy work that I'm involved in. So these dinner parties are sort of like, I have the opportunity and the pleasure and sometimes the hard responsibility of being able to walk into various different groups of people and interact and engage. Mm-hmm. And through those experiences, I see how easily we sort of like keep each other in these like random little pockets and circles, right?
Yeah.
And it always made me, it was convenient because I can compartmentalize different groups and different people and different conversations and be able to sort of like access them when needed. But over time, I sort of seen the thread in between, it, like that goes between all of those circles. You know, for instance, as simple as just like human need, right? And human need to connect and interact and to be understood. So I'd have all of these people that I engage with on a regular basis who would call me for like random conversations or advice, whether it be relationship stuff or life stuff or professional stuff. We'll just have coffee and chop it up. Mm-hmm. And after a while, like, you know, I started sort of taking a more aerial view to my process. Like, well, it's interesting how this person over here, and if they met this person over here, it would spark a very interesting exchange. And it would benefit them and then everyone who was there to watch them have said conversation. And that was part one of the process. The other part is like, I knew that if I were to invite all these people to somewhere public, inevitably I'd have to disappear to like, you know, go shake hands and talk smack. Random, whatever.
Right,
my friends
right,
say, right. My friends say I disappear all the time. It's like, yeah, I got to be public, bro, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a very like weird thing and slightly sounds arrogant. But hey, I'm always an advocate for if you have light, you let it shine as bright as life will allow you to do so.
There you go.
So I don't apologize for that. But in Western culture, it is frowned upon to sort of know that you're good at something and say it out loud. But all right, that's a tangential conversation.
There we go. Yeah.
So after a while, you know, I was like, well, you know, let me just like cast this wide net of individuals and cook a bunch of food and they'll bring beer or wine or whatever. And we all just sort of sit around various tables and just communicate and just talk, get to know each other over time. And it was sort of, it was intentional, but it was also sort of like, I would do this anyways. I just want to hang out with the homies, you know? And then it became important for me to sort of like tap into various energies and be like, yo, I really want you guys to be here because something we talked about last week, I want you to talk about it again today. Like, mm-hmm. if you feel like it, but don't feel forced, you know, just like be amongst each other, you know? There's so much of our lives, like, you know, it's funny how little people have this feeling of being seen.
Oh, that's huge.
Like, like I hear it, like somehow it's always sort of like resonated or reverberated in my head for ever since I was a child, that it's almost as if like we are living lives without ever being touched on a regular basis, like from a hand on a wrist to a hug. Not feeling seen is the same thing. So much in our day-to-day process is like, you know, we just look through people, or we only see what they can do for us in any given moment or in any given situation, as opposed to just like, I see you, man.
Man, that's huge.
And
you know, you match that together. This is where I like where this is going. So a lot of times when we talk about what we're good at, I think maybe if it is a Western thing, insofar as it's a Western thing that I can diagnose being already of this culture, right? But that we play that down because there's a shame about not being seen, that then the shadow side of that is there's shame to ask to be seen.
Right.
And what I feel like you're saying in one practice and in one sense is like, it's good for the world for your light to shine. It's good for the world for you to say, here's how you can see me, or here's what I see.
Yes.
And it's also then freeing to go throughout the world and to see others. And that calls out their own sense of purpose and their own unique shimmering.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Yeah. That's beautiful, man. Wow.
It's, you know, I would like to say that it's like some sort of intentional internal struggle that I had to go through to reach there, but I feel like I've just always felt that way. You know, growing up in a family of a lot of intense humans, mm-hmm. I think I was always sort of the one really like observing everything, and being the youngest, it was a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to sort of terrify me, the amount of like the levels and layers that I was experiencing from people. I used to think there was something wrong with me.
Mm.
And over the years, it took a while for me to get comfortable with the idea. I remember one day something happened. I forget. Oh yeah, my brothers were sent to the States when I was a kid, and my older brother Chris. It wasn't my turn to go, and my older brother Chris, like, everyone was excited in the house and like, you know, they were ready to go. Right.
Yeah.
And I just quietly just sort of disappeared from the process. And my brother, Chris, just like, he found me where, I don't know how he knew where exactly I was, you know, and he sat next to me and he just created this space. You know, he was just like, I see you. I see what's happening. And I remember thinking as a kid, like, I don't know why that sounds perfect to me, but it does.
Oh, that's so powerful.
You know, and that was a very strong lesson for me to learn, because I always got away with like just quietly disappearing into the background. Like a lifetime of hyper empathy can definitely make a person very, very skilled at just not showing up.
mm-hmm.
But my brother Chris, like he and I are very much alike, and he could always pick out the moments when my energy shifted, and he would cue in on that and talk to me about it.
What a gift.
For sure.
So you talk a lot about energy, and we're going to transition a little bit and invite you to guide us in a practice, but what is it like, what is it you think that gives you the courage now to stay attuned to that energy and to keep showing up instead of withdrawing, which you said was kind of would have been a tendency, because to keep showing up and being seen with, there's a lot of liabilities that come with that.
For sure. It's exhausting.
Yeah. And so what is it, it's kind of this question could go whichever direction you want to take it, but how would you describe energy, like all the way to how you feel it in your body, how you sense it in a room, and then what is it that gives you the courage to stay engaged?
Well, I think I was just having a conversation about this the other day. My partner was talking to me about sort of how she had experienced a moment of like we described it as sort of like seeing behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. And she was like, what I saw there was too real, and it sort of, it overexpanded me, and I had to sort of come back out of that in order for me to be able to live a normal life.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's totally real. That makes sense. You know, so many of us do sort of dip a toe in the pool on a regular basis behind that sort of curtain. But some of us don't have the luxury of being able to sort of turn away from it. Like I've known ever since I was 4 years old, this sort of like arrow view of the world. So much so that a lot of what people consider normal, I'm really not great at. But the more dynamically connected things, I show up the best in those moments. So for me, like, it's not even a choice. It's just an understanding of my person. Like, this is a gift that I was given. Didn't always feel like a gift, but at the end of the day, anything that we have that's a skill or a service that we can offer, it's not necessarily for us to accumulate accolades. It's for us to let that pass through us to enrich other people in any way, shape, or form. So you don't own what you have at the end of the day. And if anything, being able to see behind the curtain and to live that reality in such an intense way, as isolating as it is, being able to share that perspective in the moments that are hardest for other people, and to help them sort of like find footing when they feel like sort of set loose or cut free. Mm-hmm. That's a service to yourself, because you're allowing yourself to siphon off some of this energy that you just continuously accumulate. So
powerful to just keep
get it
moving.
And you
yeah.
give it.
Yeah,
yeah, like you gotta keep moving.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. That is awesome to not have to own it. That you don't own what you have, that it belongs to the community, that it belongs to the universe.
Yeah.
To let it channel through you. I think that's a powerful image. Well, we're going to take a break in a second here, and then we'll come back and you'll guide us in a short practice. Do you want to share a little bit about what that is and where that comes from? How these practices show up in your life?
Yeah, I mean, I was struggling with that a little bit because I mentioned to you, like, I had not really thought of the process that I go through. I just do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
and so this sort of gives me the opportunity to sort of break that stuff down. But it really is just like a distilled version of all the things we've already talked about, you know, being aware of your space and your place and the energy that you exude and consume, and understanding that that has an effect beyond you, and you become responsible for that energy. Every single person that you move and shift on a daily basis, whether it be a minuscule way or like a life-altering way, you now have taken on responsibility for what you've created in them. So you need to be there for the next phase, the phase after that.
Oh, that's powerful. Right on. Well, Rome will be back with you shortly. Thanks so much, man.
Sounds great.
Hey there, you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink, the founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're located in the North Side neighborhood of Cincinnati. And after nearly 2 years of over 3,000 tickets to classes and events sold, we're announcing a move to a membership-based registration. For $30 a month, a Hive member can attend unlimited classes and events. If you're interested in this for yourself or interested in sponsoring somebody else in the Cincinnati area to become a Hive member, you can find more details at cincyhive.org/membership. Well, this is From the Hive, and I'm Troy Bronsink, and we're back with Rome Intikago, and excited, really have enjoyed this conversation with me, man.
Thank you so much, man. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And so now just going to invite you to guide us in a practice that kind of resonates with your own sense of what is your contemplative practice. So I'm going to step back and put my mic on mute and just let you go for it.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So as I mentioned earlier, I was not sure how to sort of create this this moment. So bear with me and let's see if we can expand a bit. So traditional meditation, it feels like it's sort of quiet your inner self and be able to focus and internalize and sort of feel every moment. I think active meditation is something that I really, really appreciate. So we're going to try something different. I would like for you to sit in whatever room you're in and breathe in and out audibly if you can, and listen to those breaths. As you're doing that, keep your eyes open and focus on one thing in the space that you're currently in. And by one thing, it could be a myriad of things in the same direction. Just focus on a direction. Notice any detail that comes to you. Whether it be the colors, whether it be the texture, whether it be the connection of the things in front of you, or the lack of connection, or the disarray, or what may or may not be confusing, but allow your mind to be actively engaged in that moment while you listen to yourself breathe. The reason we're doing this is because we don't often have the luxury in our day-to-day to be able to stop and meditate and take in an internal inventory. So in this case, I want you to allow your mind to be so stimulated and to be so present in all of the things that are happening. So we'll continue the process. Keep breathing in and out. Now change your direction to 3 o'clock and do the same thing. Take in all of the colors, all of the textures, all of the relationships, all of what should be there and what feels like it should not be there, but allow all of it to enter into your consciousness. Thank you. Now change direction once more to 9 o'clock and breathe in. Take in all of the colors and all of the textures and all of the incongruent relationships and all of the things that are in front of you. Just allow them to be present. Don't pull them in. Don't push them away. Just let them be. Don't breathe for 1 minute. Feel free to shift your gaze from 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock in any particular order that you feel like, or a lack of order. But be fully and actively aware of all the things around you. And now finally, allow yourself to pull away from those things that you've now experienced. Slowly see less texture and less color and less vibrancy, and just work to bring those things back into yourself. And now we're going to gently come back to our moment. Thank you for allowing me on this journey with you.
That was terrific. Thanks so much, Rome.
Thank you.
I love that ability to take a practice and see it as an active engagement as a rather than a disengagement or an inactive engagement. So
the reason for that is like you have to carry your moment with you through a myriad of stimuli that you can't block out. So it's more important to be able to recognize and see clearly the jumble in front of you, and then also be able to recede actively while still engaged in the moment.
That's it.
You know, so that's it.
It's happening all at once.
All day.
Well, Rome, what a joy to be with you today. Thanks for the beautiful things you bring into the world. Thanks for your attention to energy and the ways that you courageously leap outside of yourself, and for this time we've had together.
Thank you. I mean, I don't know if it's courageous. I think it's, you know, foolhardy.
Well, here we go. Collection of holy fools. That's what we did.
That's all day. You know, some of us are born to dance a razor's edge, and that's when we feel the most centered and comfortable. And that's definitely my life and my perspective.
There we go. We're going to share more ways to connect with what you do in the show notes. But is there anything coming up in the near future here this fall that you'd like folks to kind of look for if they want to see more of what you do or connect to your work?
To be honest, you know, it doesn't feel right to use this as a promotional opportunity.
Okay. So it's great.
So I would just say, you know,
stay in touch.
Anyone who's listening, you know, find moments to actively engage with everything that's happening around you. Seeing other people is a gift to them as it is to you as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for this time, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you so much, Troy.
You bet. Talk to you later.
Hey, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this has been From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today, we've been talking with Rome in Chicago. You can check out the show notes for more ways to connect to his work. We're also appreciative in this episode for Benjamin Thomas in his original guitar track that sits behind the meditation portion of Rome's work. You can be on the lookout for the pocket practice, a shorter version of the meditation later on in the week. From the Hive is produced by Joey Taylor. Thanks for being a part of this, and take a deep breath and enjoy your day.